right? Of it's course, about setting yeah. yourself up so you can eventually exit. Yes. It's about having Todd on your team at the very beginning, like we talked about. I was lucky, right, that we built the business the way we did.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
You know, everybody wasn't. So if you understand what the end game looks like, it's easier to kind of build towards that.
And I think that the thing that I always hear you guys say is just exit planning is just good business planning. Yeah, like, there's, like it's, that's true.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Exit Is Now podcast with me, your host, Scott Snyder, hanging out with a couple of gentlemen that I think are pretty well known in certainly in the EPI community, coming in from Pittsburgh, right, or outside of Philly, you said? Outside of Philly? You guys are outside, all over the place, though. So.
Yeah, outside yeah. of Philly. For
outside
me.
Of Philly, and then right in our backyard, although he wore a Pittsburgh Pirates, I think. Is that a Pirates shirt?
Yeah,
that you...
a Mucko shirt.
Yeah, yep. So we had a couple of Pittsburgh folks I was telling you on the show. And they gave me a lot of shit about the Browns. So I don't know if we're going to go there today. But welcome, Scott and Todd from REAG. Thank you guys for coming in and spending some time with us. I think I talked to you about this a lot, Scott. It's really cool getting reacquainted with you guys over the past several years. I'd like to call you friends now. And I remember years ago when I think I had met you first at like the Cleveland chapter launch of EPI. And then... a few years later, well, I guess a bunch of time later, COVID hits.
Yep.
And we got reintroduced yep. because we really needed an instructor for our new online program. And given a lot of people were unwilling to travel or couldn't travel, you were in the backyard, right?
Yeah.
And though you knew us, we weren't as close as we were today, right. as we are today.
Sure.
And I will always have, like, in all seriousness, like a very nice place for you in my heart, if you will. I know you don't like the mushy stuff, but because you really did. Yeah. Yeah. Me and your wife share your heart. And nonetheless, in all seriousness, that was a big step up. So, and since then, we've kind of built a really nice relationship. They're our title partner at the summit, a strategic partner, faculty member, and I think that a partner that many SEPAs should consider on their exit planning team. So we'll kind of dive into that. But big year, I've actually tried to get you on the podcast before with your boy Bobby Kingsbury, but he always cancels on us.
He's an important guy.
And so what I thought was cool, though, in looking at Bobby. you two and having you come back in, particularly this year, is you guys are celebrating 20 years as a firm.
Yeah.
So that's like a huge deal, man. That's amazing.
Yeah, we were just talking about that yesterday, actually. It seems like 20 years, but it doesn't.
I would assume time flies. So how did you guys meet? College?
We're high school buddies.
High school buddies, huh?
Yeah. Football practice of summer conditioning practice of 1992.
Holy
on the football
shit,
field.
Man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So 30 plus years.
Did you know
in
90?
Too.
What's that?
I said, you had hair then, I think, right?
I did. I had hair down to this.
Oh,
like,
wow.
Right around in here. Yeah.
Did you know in 92 that like someday we're going to do something together? Like, how close were you guys in high school?
I think in high school, you know, we always talked about, you know, having a business together.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't like we were thinking we're going to go start an investment bank together. It was more like, hey, let's go do a club or stuff.
Yeah, right.
You
right.
know, especially when you're in college.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Oh, that sounds like a great idea, you know. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, we talked about having a business together, you know.
Did you guys go to the same college, too?
No. Mm-hmm.
So you guys parted ways in college and then came back together?
Yeah. We're actually, you know, we're pretty different. To be honest with you.
The two of you guys?
Yeah. Yeah.
He's much more professionalized, I would say,
better
for sure.
Looking, yeah. Right? I mean, goes on and on.
Scott's tall. He has a full head of hair. You know?
Yeah, but I mean, I don't think, and I think that's something that's interesting, right, is I didn't realize how different we were until we started a business together. You know, because when you're buddies and you're friends, you have similar interests. You hang out with people like you, right?
Yeah.
But as you get to know them more and more, you really learn how different you are. And then you try to figure out, okay, how do we build this thing in a way where you're doing what you do best and I'm doing what I do best and we're still staying friends?
Well, right? Exactly. That's one of the reasons I think, knowing that now, that you guys have known each other since 92
yeah.
and have kept what seemingly is a really good friendship
yeah.
and partnership, that's, I think, actually quite unique. I mean, you guys yeah. are in the M&A space. How many people that you meet own businesses like you? I don't know. I mean, there might be long-term first-generation owners.
Yeah.
But to be tight like you guys after 20-plus years is
pretty
cool.
There's nobody that grows up saying, hey, I want to own an M&A firm.
Right? Like, yeah, that's what's, yeah, like Todd was saying. You know? I don't think it was an investment bank, but yeah,
I mean, you end up, most people get trained in it, and then you end up, you know, leaving and building a business in it.
Yeah.
You know, and we didn't really start that way. I mean, I was trained in a tangential field, business valuations.
Right.
Yeah. Right. And then we had this philosophy, we had this idea of like, hey, we think this will work. And just applying it to a different market. And we can talk about that a little bit. But
yeah.
So then we just dove in and, you know, more balls than brains. We love to say that.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We're allowed to say that.
You know, so.
Really pushing the limit, you know?
So, yeah, we just started doing it. And, figured it out as we went, to be honest with you.
So what was the moment you guys remember where, because where were you at, Todd? Because you were at what, E&Y?
I was at E&Y.
And where were you at?
GlaxoSmithKline. So I was a scientist.
Scientist. Okay.
Yeah, and I think I convinced him with, hey, it's still science, it's just the science of numbers, right?
Well, sure, yeah. Exactly. So and do you remember the moment, though, where you guys were like, hey, let's
do this? Yeah, I do, actually, because there was an event that happened at E&Y where, you know, I knew I was leaving. And when I started to think about, well, what I do now, you know, and it was like, well, I always want to do my own business, want to do it with Todd, you know? And so I called him and he was like, cool. He's like, hey man, like I got a good thing going on here. You know, I appreciate you're at in your life, man. Right. But like, you know, it's working for me where I'm at and you know, I don't know if now's the best time. And it's like, okay, well let's figure this thing out a little bit. And so we started talking through how we're going to do it. And so when we first started, it was just me. Todd was pumping capital in, you know, to kind of keep it going.
Yep.
And I was beating the street. And then I was trying to get it to a point where I had to force him to quit his job.
To show him that.
And come in both feet. That's right.
So what was going through your brain in that? So you buy in while you're still working your job.
Yeah.
But also own this with him.
Yeah.
And so what was the turning point for you where you're like, all right, like we got good deal flow. We got a good name and it's time.
I was probably tired.
Tired.
I mean, so at the time, I was engaged. I was going to get married like the next year. So in 2005, I got married, and so we had started this in 2004.
Right.
And so my wife was behind it, and she knew, you know, it was in science, but I also sold real estate. Like I did some business things,
sure.
and some deals with doing some all that stuff, and you know, it's at one point, you know, I was working at GSK, and Scott would be like, hey, I need help spreading these financials or whatever. And so I would work there all day and then I would do that for maybe like 8 hours at night, go to sleep for like 4 hours. And so I did that for probably a year. And I'm fine. I was like, okay, I can't, this is just too much. You know, even at, you know, your late 20s, like, you know, you still have a lot of energy, but still it's like, it wears on you after a while.
Well, yeah. Working 8 hours and then coming back and putting in another shift. Yeah. That's a lot of time.
So at that point, I think we were at a position where, you know, we were going to close some deals. I think it was a distribution company we were gonna close on. It went really well. We had some things in the pipeline, and it was like, okay, let's see if we can make this work. And then, of course, you know, I talked to my wife and was like, okay, can we make this work?
Mm-hmm.
And so she was on board, and away we went.
And away you guys went. So how are you sourcing deals like in the early days when you were out there like boots on the ground making it happen? Do you remember those days?
I would do anything.
Yeah. Well, I'm saying like for a pretty young guy going out, right, and starting an M&A firm. I mean, that's...
It was hard. It was hard because, I mean, I was 26 at the time. And, you know, you don't know what you don't know, you know. And I would say, I don't know, maybe ignorance is bliss is another way to say that too.
Yeah.
You know? And so I always used to tell Todd, like, I was using E&Y as my boxing gloves, right? Like, they have a brand that if you say, hey, I'm former E&Y, people listen.
Okay.
You know, it's like, oh, wait a minute, this guy's not an idiot. You know, like, they hired him. He must know what he's talking about. He's been there for 5 years. And so, because the name on the door for us at the time meant nothing, right? So they're hiring the people, they're hiring the professionals, and you had to have a resume to back it up, right? And so in some regards, I was selling what I had already accomplished in my life, right?
Yeah.
And so at that point, you know, and that's part of the reason why we did it is I remember having a conversation with Todd. It's like, hey, you know, they can never take this away from us, right? We got these jobs, you know, having known or not less. So what are they going to say to us, right? We went out there, we took a risk, we did something we thought we could do. And oh, by the way, even if we fail, that's all right. I mean, you did something, you tried.
Yeah.
So, you know, I really didn't have a lot of fear. It was just, you got to keep hunting. You know, you're just on this hunt constantly. We got to find clients. And if you think about our business, there's two levels of sales in our business. You got to sell the first time to get the client and have inventory, right? Have something to work on, have something to sell. And then you got to sell the business and move it out the door, you know? So that revenue cycle is long in our
business. I remember when I first met you, I had sold my company. I was working with my dad a little bit, and that was his cycle too. It was like,
yeah,
you would bring in new business, but then you would work the business, and then you'd sell, or in our case, we would partner with somebody like you to sell, but then it would be gone. So you would have to keep refilling that hopper. It was kind of a grind.
So if I go back to the comment where I said I had more balls than brains, it's like, I never thought through the revenue cycle before we started. Right, like we never sat down and had that discussion.
Yeah,
you know, like, well, wait a minute, are we going to be able? Do we have enough capital to work through the first cycle, you know, or the second cycle? And what happens? Like, we were just like, man, let's go. And that's the beauty of being 26.
Yeah, right? That's true. Yeah, you know, exactly.
You're me now. You got five kids at home. You better be thinking through the revenue cycle.
Yeah,
you know, you can't just go.
Yeah.
And
you didn't have any kids, right? When did you start having your kids? What age?
It was later.
Yeah, it was later.
Yeah, for
so
sure.
So you were able to kind of get through all of, you know, you're building the foundation of the business without having a bunch of kids running around.
And you know, it's like you're back 20 years ago having that conversation with Todd and I, right? As we had that conversation. Hey, it's never going to get easier.
Yeah, like right now.
We're never going to have less responsibility. We're only ever going to have more responsibility.
Right.
Right. So if we fail miserably, we might as well go now.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Because later on, there's always reasons not to do things. Right. You can 100%. Always talk yourself out of anything. So let's go.
Well, now you have a partner, right? You guys are both married, right? So now you got to really, like, I guess you already kind of had that because you were getting married when you decided to come over. Because now it's not just about you, right? Now you have, to your point, you have a wife, you have kids, and it's a lot harder.
Well, we're all married. We spend half our time trying not to get divorced, right? Do something stupid, right?
Yeah, right, exactly.
You know,
do you guys? So, when you guys were thinking about, you know, doing this, or when you actually were out there doing it, I would assume what you kind of talked about a little bit, Scott, reputation had to be big. Like, I couldn't imagine having like a 26-year-old walk in and say, "Hey, I want to sell your company."
Yeah,
and they go, "What do you know about selling? I got a son that's your age."
Yeah, I remember if he wasn't the first guy that hired us, he was pretty close. And we were, you know, he was a pretty tight suit guy, very formal, and he was grilling me, you know, just like basically prove to me you could do this, you know. And I remember looking at him and I said, listen, I know I'm not the only guy pitching you.
Yeah.
Right. There's guys older than me, more experienced than me that are also pitching you. But I'm telling you what, you got to hire me. It's a no-brainer. And he's like, why? And I said, well, let's look at it like this, right? That guy's got a big fat bank account. Mm-hmm. He gets your deal done. He stacks that on top in his bank account. Yeah, big deal. He's fine without it. You're dealing with me. I don't sell your business. I don't eat.
Yeah.
All right? Right. It's that simple.
Right.
Right. So who do you want to work with? The guy who needs to get this done for you to eat mm-hmm. or the guy who you're just another couple bucks in his bank account? It's your call.
So think about that evolution though, guys, from like that conversation to now pitching. Because now you could be competing with somebody that was originally you, like another young guy that goes, hey, I'm going to go out and start an investment bank and go out, because you can't pitch that anymore.
Right, right.
That's, he's like, I'm not 26, and I'm, you know, the evolution of your pitch too.
But 100%. But now being 46, I've realized that you can rationalize any argument in the world. It's all how you pitch it. Yeah. It's all how you spin it, you know? So now we're selling our experience, right? We're selling our track record. We're selling what we've done. Yeah, because now we have it. We didn't have it before. So we had to sell what we had.
But the culture still at RAG is that
you're gonna
outwork anybody. I mean, that's just it.
You can sense it when you hang out with you guys too, that you guys do, that is how you go to that market owner.
And that was really the crux of how we started the business and how we even got our first deals done was just, you know, we took the calls that nobody else would take.
Yep.
You know.
Do you remember the first business you guys sold?
I think it was a Quiznos, wasn't it?
Probably.
A Quiznos? The sub place? Yeah. The sandwich place?
You take what you could get, man. Yeah. You got to eat. Yep.
Yeah. Franchise, huh?
I mean, I remember the first one. You know, I remember the first guy that screwed us over. I remember the first, like, legitimate, what we thought was a legitimate deal was with distribution company.
Yeah.
Like a last mile type of company.
Yeah.
It was, the company was based on working harder than everybody else.
Exactly,
and that's how we grew up. That's
and so
we've been able to continue that with the folks that are with us now. Today.
And there's another part of that too that we talked about before. That, you know, when you sit here and think about it, right? It's that reputation element, mm-hmm. right? There's certain things that we've never bent on that we are the exact same firm, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's and it's something. I don't think we did this on purpose, but it was the conversation your dad had with you, you know, how many years ago about, you know, don't embarrass the family name, right? Like the name, the name's what you got, right? And that's it. And it is whatever you make it is, right? And that's how we treat the name on the door. you know? And so we started that. And so now how do we pitch clients? Well, listen, it's very simple, right? We have a brand, right? We have a way we do things. We care about the people. We care, like, we're not going to tell you we can do something that we can't get done. If I can't get it done for you, I'm going to tell you that, and I'm not taking it on.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Because I don't want to tell you I can do something. You have this expectation of us, and then we let you down. Mm. That's who we are then.
Yeah.
Right? We're guys that don't perform.
Right.
And so to Todd's point of, it's like, hey, you know, we're careful about what we take. If we can't help you, we'll tell you. We'll send you over to that kid. That kid might be your better bet.
Yeah. Right, right.
You know? Yeah. And I think having that perspective now is just very valuable for us. You know, we're very careful about, we're still super aggressive. I mean, don't get me wrong. Yeah, you know, yeah. But
you've been around us.
Yeah,
before.
I've been around you guys enough.
Yeah, but we're gonna make sure that when folks are talking about who we are and what we do, that it's the way your kids could be sitting there.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, and they'd be proud of you.
Did you guys ever think about like a franchise, like a Trans World or a Murphy or anything like that?
We did.
Sunbelt.
We did, but that's not who we are, right? Like to me, that's not all that different than working for somebody else.
I'm with you. With you. You still kind of report to you have some guidelines, right?
That's right.
It's not as fast and flexible as maybe your own thing.
There's benefits to it, but you know, could we have moved faster if we had more structure and somebody gave us the systems?
Yeah, that's why I asked.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
But are our systems better because we built them ourselves and we learned the hard way? And that knowledge of learning the hard way, I mean, that's invaluable now, you know.
But if you also think about when we started 20 years ago,
yeah,
all this stuff didn't exist the way that it is now.
Right.
You know, like if you think back a decade, you know, the acronym of lower middle market, LLM is new.
Yeah.
You know, that wasn't a thing. Nobody cared about those businesses. You know, it's like now they understand that it's an inefficient market and you can get outsized returns because the market's inefficient.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That, I mean, that's one of
nobody cared.
The 20-year history too. That's one of my questions, right? It's like, so this year we debuted the State of Owner Readiness results, right? It's like I think a time where the market is changing, where we're seeing more Gen Xers, people all of our age, coming into ownership or owning. I think they're a little different than baby boomers. So over the 20 years, what about what about technology? How has that influenced the M&A process? Like, because back 20 years ago,
I think the first deals that you did. You know, all the financials are probably in 4-inch binders sitting in a conference room that we had to rent. Now, and you had to have, you know, since Scott's taller, he had to be standing in front of the door so nobody walked to the bathroom with
a
tax return or something, you know.
Right.
But now it's everything, you know, we can do it much more seamless with virtual data rooms, with all that, getting information. We don't have to have someone scanning in 100 page document to get it in electronic form. Everything just comes over. We can organize it better. It makes things a lot faster.
Yeah.
You know, and it gives the buyers, you know, time to actually analyze the data rather than, you know, trying to fight to get it.
Yeah. I could imagine it gave you probably a better national presence, right? I mean, at least from a cost effective standpoint, because in the old days, right. And if you had to do some due diligence, you'd have to fly. If the business was in Texas, you were flying there. Mm-hmm. Versus getting their financials digitally and being able to kind of do your own analysis. I would assume that it's actually been influenced quite a bit by tech.
I mean, from a technology standpoint, we've always tried to have that as part of our business. Yep. You know, I think there was an old school way of doing it, but, you know, we always had it where, you know, somebody would send us a packet of information and we, you know, first thing we'd do is scan it in, so that we had it electronically and we could move it around. And so even down to like video calls and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I mean, we were early adopters of Skype and just different things.
When COVID hit, it didn't change anything for us. We were already built for COVID. That's how we started the business. That we started at 100% virtual. We've never had office space. It's not how we roll.
Yeah, right. That's because you're outside of Philly, then Jacqueline's in
Pittsburgh
and you're here.
Yep.
So like,
So everyone was scrambling to adjust to the quote unquote new normal.
Yeah.
And it was great for us because now, you know, whereas before someone might be judging how successful you are by the fact that you're working from home or that you don't have office space, when COVID hit, that all stopped.
Yeah, man. Maybe you should teach that course. How do you make that happen?
Yeah, and there was a paradigm shift where people, you know, we try to convince people a lot of times that, you know, we don't always have to do stuff in person.
Yeah.
We were happy to go see new clients. We're happy to go, you know, kick off engagements and stuff like that. But you know, if you had a new client that was in, you know, Chicago or whatever, you had to jump on a plane and go see them face to face, which is all great. You know, it's great to go have dinner with them, meet them and understand the whole thing. But, you know, some of those initial calls you could take care of, you know,
much more streamlined
over Zoom. Yeah. And so once COVID hit, you know, people were okay with that. And then they realized, I think too, that they got some of their time back, you know?
Yeah. Right.
And so they didn't have to go to the airport 2 hours early and all this other stuff, you know? So,
if you go back all the way to when he was at GSK and what he did there, and I was like, you know, when he explained to me what he did, and he's got to break it down into terms that I can understand and comprehend, I'm not a scientist.
Yeah, right.
And so basically, I remember you said to me, you're like, well, basically what I do is I take a six pack and I figure out how to turn it into a keg. Right. Yes. And I'm like, now that I understand.
Yeah. I get it.
Right. And I'm like, what does that mean? And he goes, well, listen, it's not like baking, right? Where you double the recipe and you get twice as much.
Right.
Right. When you're dealing with pharmaceuticals and you put more of something in, it changes everything.
Yeah.
So basically my job is I figure out how to scale things. Mm-hmm. Right. And so when we started building this thing, you know, Todd always had scale in mind.
Yeah.
Right. Like, how do we build it so that we can scale it?
Right.
Right. And he's told me for 20 years, like, hey, man, it's great that you have all this stuff in your head. Right. But if we can't teach it to somebody else, right, if we can't get that knowledge out there, we can't build systems around it so that we can build an actual business, then this is all about you. And this can't be all about you. It's got to be about the name on the door. Mm. Right. And so he had that mentality from the very beginning. Mm. And that's where I go back and say to you, when COVID hit, I mean, dude, Todd had us like in this beautiful spot where it was we were allowed. I mean, we took advantage of it.
Yeah.
For lack of a better way to say it. We took advantage of it.
You seem to ground him quite a bit, you know, like
we always formalize
him a little bit.
Yeah. Somebody has to. Right?
Well, we always, and it was kind of a misnomer, but we always talked about him being the gas pedal, me being the brake pedal, right?
Okay.
And I think early on that was probably true. Now I think over the years, like, we understand, you know, it's not all gas and all brake. You know,
fair.
It's just, you know, I know there's certain things that I could want it all I want, but I know he's not going to do it.
Right.
You know, and the same things that he, you know, he could something in it, and he knows I'm not going to agree with it. So we know now, you know, after, you know, over the years, you have these conversations for 5 hours debating this or that, you know, and then you realize kind of where you're at. And at the end of the day, I mean, I think we're better because of it. You know,
absolutely. Those conversations are 5 minutes now.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Because we know how to deal with each other. You know, I understand how he views the world, how he thinks about things. And if I want to make an argument for something, I know what I have to overcome because I know what he's going to hang up on, right? Yeah. And if I can't come with that argument, it's probably a bad idea.
Right.
Yeah.
You know? And the same thing.
Was it like that when he first started, though? No. Like, was there some growing pains for you guys?
Well, it's like we said earlier. I mean, I didn't know him that well. That's true. Friends.
Yeah.
But how you deal with your buddies and your friends is totally different than how you deal with your business partners.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
And so we almost had to get to know each other all over again in some instances, you know? And, you know, one of the things too, it's funny, if you think about the evolution, and this is part of the thing is being 20 years later that you have to adjust to even still, is he's not the same person now that he was 20 years ago.
Well, right? That's true too.
You grow, you change, you evolve. That gas pedal, brake pedal, I mean, maybe still, right? But we used to always say it takes two pedals to make the car go,
right?
You can't run the car without both pedals. Now it's like, you know, there's times where 20 years ago, he would have stood on that brake pedal with 2 feet when I said something, certain things, you know? Now he'll be like, it's a good idea. Go for it. And I'm like, wait a minute, dude. Like,
yeah, wait.
Don't we have, you know?
And I go, hey, man, you don't have to convince me. Like, we're already.
Can we move on, man? I got stuff to do, all right?
Yeah. And so I think that's just, and now I think it's we understand, you know, that we're both gas and brake.
Yeah, together.
For certain things.
That's right.
And that makes things a lot smoother.
So along this 20-year journey, too, you guys make a couple acquisitions of your own, right? 13 and 14?
Yeah.
What was the...
If you say so, was it 13 or 14?
I think it was. Yeah, these guys don't even remember. Time flies. I had to do my research, you know. But I think... Yeah. I just found it interesting because at least the story you tell on the website, right, is you guys made an acquisition actually in November of 13 and then a year later in November of 14. And so what was the thought process behind that?
I think it was scale.
Scale, yeah.
But I think, you know, RAG has evolved over the 20 years too, you know, from what we expected it to be to what it is today.
Okay.
And so, you know, those acquisitions were specific to those time periods. You know, we saw some things in the market that we were trying to take advantage of. We were trying to add, you know, different skill sets and things like that. And so those things kind of fell on our into our lap.
Yeah.
And so we made the decision to pursue those. Mm. But I mean, I don't know how much we really utilize any of that stuff now, but at the time it made sense.
Add-on.
Yeah.
All right, so I got to switch gears here. I want to talk a little bit. In at the beginning of the year, we launched the 2023 National State of Owner Readiness Survey results. And I think that if you read the report, it really tells a pretty unique story, I think, and something I think is actually quite exciting for the future. So I'd like to get your guys' perspective on it in kind of that M&A market. So we will do that right after a quick break. Stick with us.
For business owners, by a business owner. Walking to Destiny is your essential resource for understanding what makes your business highly profitable and significant. It becomes a business owner's handbook to know how to rapidly grow value and ultimately unlock the personal wealth trapped in business. Exit Planning Institute CEO Christopher Snyder demonstrates how strategic exit planning will help you achieve improvements today while positioning you to build wealth for generations. Secure your success along other value creators. Discover, prepare, and decide what your walk to destiny will ultimately be. If executed correctly, these strategies can grow a business owner's wealth by 10 times. Walking to Destiny, the second edition, the 11 actions an owner must take to rapidly grow value and unlock wealth. Get your copy today at www.walkingtodestiny.com.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the show. So I wanted to switch gears. As I was saying before the break, we debuted the National State of Owner Readiness results, had four major observations a part of that, and we're seeing a little bit of a market shift. So given these guys have been in the business for 20 years, I wanted to see kind of what they thought. So what we were talking about a little bit about during the break was, I would assume, and I mean, maybe my assumption's a little wrong, but that back 20 years ago, some of your first clients were the founder, what you were saying, the founder owner, maybe that first gen, maybe that typical baby boomer. And I was wondering if today you see it a little bit more widespread, meaning you're working with some millennial owners, some Gen X owners, some baby boomer owners, because I think the market is about 51% now baby boomer owned, 43% Gen X owned, so people in their 40s and early 50s. And at least that matched well with the results from the State of Owner Readiness Survey as well, is that we had that kind of spread. So what does that look like today? You're talking about this kind of at the break. Why don't you share your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, early on we did a lot of Main Street businesses, and that was probably the founder-owned businesses. Now, you know, 20 years later, a lot of it is more the executive team, the C-level folks, so CEOs and CFOs that are looking to, you know, do some strategic planning, whether that's growing through acquisition, whether that's recapping, something like that. And so that's a lot of where our clients sit now, not so much the founder. I mean, we still do that.
Yeah,
and
sure.
I think those folks are probably baby boomers.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how much we do with the millennials or the Gen Z. I think those folks are probably, the stuff we deal with isn't very sexy, you know, like when you talk about manufacturing.
Hey, speak for yourself, buddy.
You know, industrials and metalworking and printed circuit boards, stuff like that. And so those businesses are all great and they're really where we excel. But
sure.
So I think, you know, most of what we deal with is probably the baby boomers and the Gen X folks.
It's tough to really figure out how much of the things that we see that are different are a function of the evolution of our business versus the market itself.
Mm-hmm. True.
Yeah, right. Like fair. That, like it's that's hard. Fair. It's hard to figure that out, that's you know? But I think the one thing that is cool, at least for us right now is, you know, we're selling businesses that we help people acquire. You know, we've been
that's
in the game
cool.
long enough,
yeah.
the
game,
you know,
yeah.
that we're seeing the evolution. Like we get clients again that we've had 20 year relationships with.
And you now know, they're ready to sell.
Yeah, like we've done help four buy sides with them or something, right? We've helped them acquire four or five companies, and they're coming back and saying, hey, we want to spin this one off, you know? And
wow,
it's like where
cool.
we, you know, go back to the beginning of the discussion. We had to pitch that guy, you know, as a 26-year-old yeah, yeah, and get him in here, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Now we went the whole journey with him, right? Sure, we've helped that management team acquire four or five companies.
Right.
They're coming back to us to sell something that we could have never pitched back then and gotten.
Yeah.
And now nobody's pitching against. It's ours, right? Yeah. You can't knock us off the stool.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And that's really neat. That's, you know, I don't really know the way to say it.
Yeah. So if you want to learn more about that, come to our session in Marco Island.
Yeah, right, exactly. That's right. We are. Yeah. That's actually what we're going to talk about.
That's pretty cool. So the other observation, one of the big observations that I saw, the state of owner readiness survey is that owners across the board, regardless of age, are much more aware and educated about what exit planning is.
Yeah.
So what boots on the ground in the market. Do you feel like that's true? So we interviewed. Or surveyed 1,100 business owners, all third party. So these owners aren't coming from certified exit planning advisors, because that was like the first question, right? Like, well, if you're interviewing a bunch of owners that work with certified exit planning advisors, of course they should be more educated.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But this was two third party market research companies that just went out into the market and surveyed business owners. And there's a whole section in the State of Owner Readiness Survey all about awareness and education. Yep. So do you guys feel that the owners that you work with are more educated than they were 20 years ago about what exit planning is?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's fair. I mean, think about, 20 years ago, right? It was what, 2004?
2004. I mean, mm-hmm. Right? EPI wasn't even around. So when you started your business, we weren't even around.
Right.
We were founded in 2005, and the first SEPA program is in 2007.
Right. I'm not a historian, right? But when did libraries go out of, where you had to go to get information?
Right.
Exactly. Right? Just think about the flow of information now, how quickly information flows, how much more information's out there. You know, obviously, you guys are out there educating the market, which is fantastic for guys like me, right, who are sitting at the end of that process. Yeah, absolutely. So, the information is there. Does everybody consume it? No, right? But that's what we're all out there doing, because if you go back to the, our core values, if you will, right? We want to help people.
Right.
And that's why we're in the business, and it's a horrible feeling when you're looking at somebody's life's work and you can't help them.
Yeah.
You want to,
but
you're doing them a disservice if you take their money and tell them you can accomplish this task when you can look at it and you know it's not getting done.
Right.
So that's what I told you at the beginning. We will tell you that. We will be honest with you, right? Yeah. We'll circle you back to an exit planner who can help you.
Right.
Now, you might be pretty discouraged that you can't get out right now when you had your heart set on it, but that part's not my fault, right?
Yeah.
You should have been thinking about this earlier. You should have been focusing on this earlier, And it's like we do all those Zoom calls, and you hear me say it every time. It's never too early to start this thought process. You don't have to want to sell. That's not what it's about. Right, of it's course. About setting yourself up so you can eventually exit.
Yes.
It's about having Todd on your team at the very beginning, like we talked about. I was lucky, right, that we built the business the way we did.
Yes, fair. Yeah.
Everybody wasn't. So, if you understand what the end game looks like, it's easier to kind of build towards that.
And I think that the thing that I always hear you guys say is just exit planning is just good business planning.
Yeah,
like there's thing. Like it's that that's true.
It is,
because the worst feeling for us is, you get a call from a bank that they're taking a business in receivership and someone died unexpectedly.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you can't really help them.
Yeah.
No.
And you feel terrible, but it's
right.
It's just, and they didn't do any of that. They don't, the people that are left don't know how to run payroll. They don't know how to sell. They don't, we're not talking about a $500,000 business or we're talking about $20 million business.
Right. Yeah.
Where that person was the person.
Yeah. Thinking along those lines, I've had this on the show, this discussion on the show quite a bit is, and I don't know, as business owners yourself, you could see if you agree. When I owned my first company when I was 16 and all my mentors and the books I was reading and the classes that I took in high school and college around entrepreneurship or economics or business management all taught me really how to grow a successful company, right? Like a strong balance sheet, profitable, lean operations, good people, purposeful product, but they did not teach me how to turn all of that into value.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, what I think is if you fast forward another 20 years and you have a guy like me now, and I'm obviously a little biased because I have my dad who created the methodology that we teach, but if you could grow up through value acceleration and then approach you guys, how much more profitable everybody is.
Yeah.
Right? Think about that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'll, what you just said, I'll call it transferable value.
Right, right.
It's like building value is one thing, but building something that's valuable to somebody else.
Exactly right.
That they're willing to actually exchange value with you on.
Right,
right,
right.
And that's a totally different.
Yeah, that's a different ball game.
Totally different.
Year over year success.
And most people don't
don't start it. When you started that, you never thought about that exit. Mm-hmm. It wasn't even, actually, you were probably insulted when somebody suggested that you were going to sell it someday.
Yeah, right.
Right? Because at 16 years old, you're going to do this forever, right? This is my business.
Even through, into my early 20s when I still had the company, that's my, I always talk about when we're teaching our SEPA program. Right. It's like one of my first exit planning lessons is that once I did sell that at 25 years old, I was like, I totally had lost my identity.
Yeah.
Because to your point,
right,
I didn't really think about life without M&S Connection Landscaping. I was a landscaper. That's what I did. And
right.
Mm-hmm. At the time I was married. We were thinking, I had just gotten married. We were thinking about having kids. And I was like, my son's going to run this mower one day.
Yeah.
You know?
So we should get the Kelsey brothers in here for this podcast, right? And because Jason's about to go through this too.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
He just announced his retirement. Yeah. It's the same thing. That's his identity.
Yeah. That is very, very
business
true.
Owners are the exact same.
Yeah. So the other thing that we saw, the other observation inside of the State of Owner Readiness Survey, tell me if you think this is true, is that when we were founded in 2005, EPI was founded on a book called The $10 Trillion Opportunity, right? So Pete and Rich, investment bankers, did a research project on owners, came out with a $10 Trillion Opportunity saying the silver tsunami, right, of baby boomers is going to equate to $10 Trillion in wealth. If you look at the stats and make some assumptions with the stats that we have from the State of Owner Readiness Survey and other national surveys, we find that 75% of business owners in the State of Owner Readiness Survey said they wanted to exit in 10 years and 45% in the next five. So how does that impact our market? Do you think it's going to be that quick? It looked like, so baby boomers, right, are all turning 60 years old this year. So they're kind of in that retirement age, if you will. And then it looks like from our study that people between basically 40 and 54 years old then are accelerating their exits. These are going to be like your boomerang people that sell their business over 10 years and then buy another business and sell that and buy another business and sell that. So do you feel like that is upon us, that type of market where we're selling almost $9 trillion of wealth in 5 years?
That's a tough one.
I mean, honestly, I'm going to say it depends because I remember reading that book. Back in the day.
Yeah.
And everybody was excited, but things happen, right? I mean, you have the downturn of 08 and 09.
Yeah.
Right. And so that elongated that exit mm-hmm. push, because
that's fair.
That all changed. The credit markets dry up, in 08. That has issues, that go through till probably 2010. And then you still have 3-year window where people are trying to make back all the money they lost. So, right. I mean, you're just constantly pushing that window out. And so I think you have that, plus you have COVID, you have all these other macroeconomic forces that probably elongate that window. So, I mean,
there was some correction there with, the years private equity had recently,
sure.
right? To correct some of that.
Right.
Right. But, have we burned off that $10 trillion backlog, if you will?
Right.
No.
It has not happened. It has not happened at the rate, when you started in 05, it hasn't happened at the rate that we all thought it would.
No, not at all.
Not even close.
I mean, even though I thought Pete and Rich, right, were visionary,
yep.
were like kind of progressive thinking and whatnot, the boomers were just too young
back then, 20 years ago,
my dad would have been like 55, he would have been 45 years old. Like he wasn't selling his company.
And that the way that generation is built, they're grinders.
Exactly.
They're not tapping out 30 years. No. You got it.
They're going to sell when they're ready to sell, right? More emotionally ready. Like I want to go, compared to like an athlete, right?
That's right.
My body's run down. I want to do some other things in life. I feel it's time to retire.
Right.
So that didn't happen back then.
That's right. So if you think about that group, if they are wearing down, right, now they're starting to build that business a little bit different. They're starting to make those changes so that they can operate mm-hmm. that business differently.
Yeah.
Right? And that's all the stuff that we teach and we talk about here.
Absolutely right. Right? Absolutely right. So let's talk a little bit about your work inside of the EPI community too. So pre-show, we were saying you guys built out this SEPA portal.
Yeah.
And very like intentional, like he said it was your idea, very intentional and deliberate. So talk to us about, how are you guys working with the Certified Exit Planning Advisor community and how do wealth managers, consultants, the primary two that we have, come in and work with you guys?
Yeah, I mean, So it really was a team effort. I mean, I appreciate it, but at the end of the day, I mean, we talk to SEPAs every month, the people that go through the course, and we try to reach out to them and just try to be a resource as much as we can. And so what I took was just you know, on our weekly calls and the things that, you know, Scott shared with me a lot of his conversation that he has, and it's very similar conversations with a lot of them. And I said, well, you know, let's think about how we can make this more efficient, right? If they're asking for certain
there's
things,
there's that theme again, right? Trying to make our business more efficient,
scalable, right? Efficient, yep. All that stuff. Yep.
So, you know, if we understand, if you're getting a lot of the same questions, tell me what the questions are. And then, right. You know, let's work with our marketing team to put some stuff around that, some collateral, some content. Yeah. And so that's what culminated into the SEPA portal, was somewhere to say, hey, you know, we want to support the SEPA community as best we can, the EPI community as a whole. You know, here's a place on our website where you can get information readily. It's readily available. It's easy. There's no paywalls. There's no, we don't need to get your email address and stuff. Typically, I already have it.
Yeah.
So, you know, just come take the information and
make your practice better. Make your practice better. We're the goal line, right? We know what the goal line has to look like.
Yeah.
So as we can continue to feed that information back to the line of scrimmage,
yeah,
right? The better off we're all going to be.
Nice football.
You know? I got Kelsey in there. I got that. You really got it going on.
But yeah, no, in all seriousness, I think, and one thing that you said earlier on the show that I always like to drive home in our SEPA programs is the SEPAs that are listening now, we go through this methodology that's discover, prepare, and decide, right? So I think a lot of the times when we get to the teaming section, which is right after you actually, like on Friday, because you guys are up on Thursdays, they talk about when they need to use you guys. And I think a lot of people say, you know, I'm bringing the M&A guy, the investment banker in the decide gate. Mm-hmm. One of the things when I looked at your SEPA polar, I guess to cut through it, there's two words I wrote down that really come to mind. I think you guys are super generous, and I think you guys are super collaborative. And I think those really make really good partnerships. And I think it's one of the reasons that you also fit really well into our community, because I think many of our SEPAs are that way. I think me and my team are certainly strive to be that way as well. And one of the things you say inside of the SEPA program is, don't use me certainly use me and decide, but bring me in and discover way early on in the equation to at least give you, even if the guy is 2, 3, 4, 5 years away from an actual transaction, bring me in early.
You know, yes, because if you think about that 20 years and what we've seen
exactly
in that 20 years, lean on that, man. Yeah. Like, take that experience and use it for the benefit of your client.
Right.
You know, like, that was a tough road. That was a hard sled to get through, but we got through it. And I actually had a client, and I find myself repeating this since I said it, is I had a client the other day, or a couple weeks ago now. The call was over, and he said, hey, before you go, I have a question for you. And I said, go ahead, man. And he said, how did you learn all this stuff? Right? He goes, is there like a college course that teaches you all of this? Or like where, how did you get to be able to do this? And I laughed. And I said, well, you want the honest answer? And he goes, yeah. And I said, think about our business journey as like walking through a parking lot full of potholes, right? And there's potholes everywhere. I think I stepped in every single one, right? And because I stepped in every single one, I can now guide you through the parking lot because I know where the potholes are.
Right.
I've already stepped in it, right? And I said to him, you know what? As a matter of fact, now that I think about it, I bet you built your business the exact same way, right? Why are your processes the way that they are? Because you're constantly tweaking, you're constantly refining, you're constantly building, right? Absolutely. And if you're not doing that, I mean, what are you doing? What are you doing? Right. Why are you in this
business? I think it's a perfect way to describe it. Absolutely. We all do that as business owners.
And so that SEPA portal, the whole idea of this is to take that and say, hey, here's the potholes.
Yeah.
Here's what you need to know. Here's the information you need to pull together. Then we got to look at the information. We got to say, okay, where are the challenges here? Yep. You know, let's fix a couple of these challenges. And chances are it's 80-20 rule.
Yeah.
Right? 20% of the changes increase the value by 80%. Mm-hmm. So let's focus on that 20%. Yep. Let's not get all caught up in our underpants trying to fix everything.
Yeah.
Right? We only have so much time, limited resources. Let's focus on the heavy stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? And that's what the idea of the SEPA portal really, really is.
Yeah, I think it's incredible. So SEPA or non-SEPA, our listeners, go navigate into their website and check that out. I'll probably leave it in the show notes or something too, because I do think as I was preparing for the show, going down that rabbit hole in there, there's a ton of stuff, and your market updates in there, your Q1 market update is in there right now.
It just occurred to me that we'd be terrible business owners and terrible marketers if we didn't mention it was reag.com.
Well, sure.
Right? Yeah. They would kind of almost have to say that, right? Yeah. We're hyping it.
Yeah, we're
hyping it. We got to tell people what it is.
It's going to pop up on their screens if they're watching.
all right, cool.
On the YouTube or LinkedIn. So we're coming to the top of the hour. I got to take a quick break. When I come back, I want to talk about the remainder of the year, 2024, and what you guys anticipate. Like advice for owners, focus in the market, things of that nature. So we'll be back in a quick second.
Awesome.
The Exit Planning Institute is the authority in exit planning. With its award-winning process, the Value Acceleration Methodology provides deep insights into how to help business owners create more significant companies while blending and aligning their business, personal, and financial goals. EPI brings together the world's most elite exit planning advisors to form the EPI Community. The EPI community represents over 15,000 professional advisors worldwide, including its 5,000 certified exit planning advisors. These advisors include financial advisors, growth consultants, CPAs, attorneys, M&A advisors, amongst others, who come together to expand their knowledge, create and innovate, network and relationship build, grow their practices, and better attract and engage business owner clients. Join EPI today and gain access to the community, content, courses, credential, and conference that you as the professional advisor need in order to harness the opportunity with small to lower middle market business owners who strive to grow a company of significance, thus having a highly valuable and transferable company. Follow the Exit Planning Institute on LinkedIn and visit earnsepa.com to learn more about the community leading the exit planning profession.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Exit Is Now podcast. So we're hitting the top of the hour. I want to wrap up our show with Scott and Todd by kind of asking some market questions. What does the rest of the year have in store? We're in an election year, so I'm assuming that perhaps might impact deals. We'll get your opinion on that, maybe.
Over
and then
a little bit, yeah.
What would your, if I'm an owner listening in I am in that cycle of saying, you know, I think by the end of the year, I would like to put my company on the market, or I'm thinking next year, what is some advice that you can give us and where do you think the market goes in 2024?
I'm super bullish.
Yeah.
On 24, super bullish. Okay. You know, I think, and you know, we were talking about the SEPA portal a little bit ago. We did a market update with you guys and,
yeah,
you know, the video's on there and I'll say the same thing I said there is, you know, last year, the data looks bad at a macro level.
I did see this. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But it's a certain segment of the market. You know, the very large stuff, the large cap deals, the international deals, they weren't happening as much. Mm. But in the lower middle market where we were at, it was still a lot of action. I mean, it was a very good year. And I think, you know, you still have tons of capital sitting on the sidelines, right, that needs to be put to work. It has to be put to work. I mean, it's been raised.
Yeah,
right. So there's this velocity of money that's 100%. Happening out there. Mm-hmm. And so it's still a seller's market. In my mind, mm-hmm. right? And it's supply and demand. That's the basic rule. And the demand is out there. Mm-hmm. So if you have a good quality company, boom.
Game time.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And now there is a race to quality that's happening, right?
Okay.
If you want a premium multiple, you better be bringing a premium asset.
Yeah.
Right? It has to be ready. And it's got to be nice. It's got to be good to go. But if it is, man, go.
Okay.
Go. That's my take.
Todd, what do you think?
I would say my advice would be start. You know, if that's, you know, because I think you can always convince yourself that you should wait.
Yeah.
And at some point you just, you know, something's going to happen. You know.
I know.
And so it's like, you know, you can continue to put that off and put it off, but that would be my advice is if that's really where you're at, start.
Take
a little piece. You know,
yeah.
I mean, they tell you, you know, you eat an elephant one bite at a time, right? I mean,
oh, good one.
Take a bite.
Mm, yeah.
You know, you got to do something.
Yeah. Yeah. True. All right, gentlemen. Well, I appreciate you coming into the offices for the show and for our audience. Subscribe, listen, and leave a review on all of your podcast platforms. Scott, Todd, I really appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Thanks for having
you.
See
you again.